Once upon a time, there was a young man whom I will call Joe, and a young woman whom I will call Mary. But we start with Joe. He, and this is a true story, and it happened just this past year, less than a year ago. And the reason I'm telling you this story to begin with is because when you look at an old lady up here, gray-haired lady, you think, what in the world does she know about anything in our generation? Well, obviously it's been 1,000 years since I was your age. But I want you to know that some of the things that I'm going to be saying that you may think are extremely bizarre have also been thought of by some people your age. And Joe was praying. He was a man in his mid to late 20s when he began to pray that God would lead him to the right woman to marry. Now, Joe was not a Christian in his early 20s, and he'd lived a very, shall we say, fast and dissolute life. And when he began to understand that God's standard is sexual purity, he completely left behind all of that promiscuity and committed his life to Christ. And I believe that the most crucial proof of the validity of a young person's faith is the willingness to surrender his sexual desire to God. I don't think there is a more crucial test. And if Jesus Christ is not Lord of your love life, Jesus Christ is not Lord of your life. It is the most explosive, the most dangerous, the most difficult, you name it, the crucial testing ground. And so for Joe, it was a crucial testing ground. And he said, Lord, I'm not going to date. I'm not going to look at anybody. I want you to lead me in your time to the right woman. Well, he began to feel that God was pointing to a certain young woman to whom Joe was not attracted. So he began to, he was baffled by this, of course, and he thought, well, surely it's my imagination that God is pointing to this woman, and I'll just continue to pray that God will lead me to the right woman. And he did not date. And I find that dating, wherever it's done, and as far as I can tell, it doesn't seem to be happening very much anywhere across this country. I do quite a bit of talking with college and high school students, and it's just amazing to me how what hard times dating seems to have fallen on. Nobody knows who's supposed to call whom, and nobody knows who picks up the tab, and nobody knows what you're supposed to talk about. Maybe I should say nobody knows what you're not supposed to talk about, because as far as I can tell, everybody talks about that three-letter word on the very first date. So anyway, Joe said, forget all that, Lord. I'm going to concentrate on you and your will and on my studies. And he happens to be a student in a graduate level institution. And it occurred that my husband could not drive me to a certain speaking engagement one day, and so Joe was the driver. And Joe began to ply me with questions. And he said, for one thing, he said, do you think it's possible that God could lead a man to marry a woman that he doesn't have any particular feelings for, that he's not physically attracted to and he hasn't fallen in love with? And I said, well, Joe, that's an interesting question, and it's not very difficult to answer. My answer is yes, and the reason that I believe that is because most of the world, and you young people may not have much of a sense of history, but those of you that have, I think, will agree with me, most of the world, through most of human history, has never heard of falling in love. It has never had anything to do with the choice of a marriage partner. It's a very, very recent idea, and it's not working very well. The do-it-yourself kind of marriage has a very poor record in our country, doesn't it? And in most countries, in most of the world, through most of human history, there has been a third party that has been the one who arranged the marriage. So marriages have, generally speaking, been arranged by somebody else, and in places like India, they still are. And I know an Indian couple, Lars and I had a very interesting conversation with one who had literally never seen each other until their wedding day. And the marriage had been arranged years before by their parents. Well, anyway, Joe was asking me this question. And so I said, the answer is yes, it's entirely possible that God might lead you to a woman to whom you're not attracted. And so he began to tell me about his prayer and how he was asking God to really lead him and not allow him to make any more foolish mistakes. He'd made so many in the past. And a few days later, he mentioned to me that he was going home in another few days. And I didn't ask any questions. I didn't pry into why, but he said, maybe you'd like to know why. And I said, well, it's none of my business, but if you want to tell me why, sure. And he said, I think I'm going to take the young lady to meet my parents. And I said, the young lady? Who's the young lady? Well, he said, I did mention to you that God seemed to be putting his finger on a certain young woman in my life. And I said, yes, but as far as I knew, it hadn't gone any further than that. I said, things must have gone pretty fast in these few intervening days if you're going to take her down to meet your parents. And he said, well, as a matter of fact, they have. In fact, he said, before I even talked to you, what I didn't tell you that time was that I had already proposed to her. And I sort of gasped like some of you. Well, I said, so what was her answer? And he said, well, she told me that she couldn't give me an answer right away. Of course, I wanted to know. I said, where did you do this? What did you say? I mean, you'd never talked to the lady before. I mean, he had talked to her in a group like this, a church group. He knew her as he knew 100 other girls. Well, he said, I just said to her, would you go to the beach with me this afternoon? And Mary was baffled and probably flattered because this man's a very attractive man and he was one of the leaders of this group. And she said, yes. So he said, almost as soon as we started to walk down the beach, I said to her, I believe that God is leading me to ask you to marry me. Will you marry me? And she was taken aback and she said, well, I'll have to wait and see what the Lord says to me. Which is very sensible. And 2 weeks later, she called him to say yes. Now, that's not the end of the story. They have gotten married. This all happened in October, and they were married in January, having had, I don't know whether they ever had anything that you would call a date. They had a few conversations, and he did take her down to meet his parents, and he met her parents. And on another occasion, he was driving me to the airport. And he said, you know, there are a few more details that I wanted to tell you about that story that I hadn't told you before. He said, what I discovered when I asked Mary to marry me, after she had said yes, she told me this part of her story. She said, a year before, she had heard Elizabeth Elliot speak on the subject of passion and purity. And she said, it just sounded so far out to me, I thought it was crazy. But then she said, the more I thought about it, the more I thought maybe it's not so crazy after all. Because she said, I had been making myself very obvious and very available to guys. I was hoping that God was going to give me a husband. And so she said, I was just letting it be known that, you know, I was here and I would be delighted if somebody wanted to date me. And she said, I was becoming aggressive. And she said, when Elizabeth talked about that women are not supposed to be the aggressors, that men are the initiators and women are the responders, she said, that rang a bell in my mind. And she said, I began to pray, Lord, I'm going to leave this thing up to you, and I'm not going to do one single thing about getting a date, let alone getting a husband. Lord, I want you to lead me, and get this, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to lead me to a young man who has already committed this matter to you, a young man who is willing to marry on faith. Well, he said, you know, when she told me that after she had accepted my proposal, he said, that just blew my mind. Because God not only had answered my prayer, but he had answered her prayer in a most unusual way. And, of course, she didn't know his story, that he was a man who had already said, Lord, I'm going to marry on faith. I tell you this story, as I've already explained, because I want you to know that even if you think I am absolutely bonkers and way out there in some other planet and some other era in history, it can happen. And it's not the only story I've heard like that. I wish I had more time this morning. I would love to tell you some of the others. I did talk to a church group about a year ago and saying all the kinds of things that I'm going to be saying to you in the next few minutes. And when I finished, the leader of that group, who was a young married man, stood up and he said, I don't need to validate what Elizabeth has said, but he said, I do want to add my testimony. He said, that's exactly what I did. And he said, I made up my mind at the age of 22 because I had already done a lot of foolish things and broken several girls' hearts and had my own heart broken several times. I said, okay, Lord, that's it for dating. I'm not going to date anymore till you point out the woman that I'm to marry. And he made up his mind he wasn't going to date till he was 29. Well, the Lord pointed out the girl when he was 28. And he said it was kind of humiliating to me because I had to eat my words. I realized that God was telling me that this was the woman and I was going to have to marry her even though I wasn't yet 29. He said it does work. Now I want to go back asking, first of all, this question. What has happened to courtship? Most of you would never even think of using the word. But there was such a thing as courtship, a way in which a gentleman wooed a lady, chose somebody not necessarily because she was a perfect 10 in looks, but because, if he was a Christian man, because she was a Christian, and that's qualification number one, don't even think of dating somebody that's not a Christian. Don't even think of it. Second thing, she was feminine. And if you're a real man, you want a real woman, right? If you're a real woman, you want a real man. You want somebody that's masculine. And I don't know what other qualities he might be looking for, but at any rate, a gentleman would choose a lady and begin to woo her, to move in a measured, courteous, determined way to draw her to love him and to himself. And I want to tell you some of the things that I think have happened to courtship. One of them is feminism. I don't think we have begun to realize the damage that the feminist movement has done in our country. It comes straight out of the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve decided they did not want to be human beings, they wanted to be gods. And they rejected God's gifts, all the gifts that he had given them. And the one thing that he had not given them, they insisted upon taking. Because Satan had convinced them that they could upgrade their lifestyle and become gods. And so they took the fruit, and whose idea was it? Eve's. It was Eve's idea to eat the fruit, and Eve became the initiator, and Adam became a wimp. And instead of being the protector and the provider and the husband, he became the follower. He was the responder. So the roles, the man as the initiator, the woman as the responder, were completely reversed, and we've been in a horrible mess ever since. Now, if there's something deep down in your heart, you gentlemen this morning, that says, I really don't feel comfortable if a girl asks me out, I want to tell you, you're right. And it's not because you're a male chauvinist pig. It's because deep down inside of us, there is that order that God put in the universe. We women are not to be the initiators. And just let me put in a little parenthesis here, girls. You may think I'm crazy, but you just met husband number three. God has given me three husbands. My mother told me two things when I was about 12 years old and hardly anything else about the subject of that three-letter word. She said, don't ever chase boys. And when you go out with them, keep them at arm's length. And I kept those rules, kids. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine keeping those rules? Well, I did. God gave me three husbands. Okay, feminism. Men and women are not equal. We were never created to be equal. We are equal in certain things, and just a very few things that make some sense. We are equally created. We are both created by God. Men and women are both created in the image of God, and men and women are both given moral responsibility. So if you want to talk about equality, let's talk about it with clear definitions. But we are not interchangeable. Now, I don't need to prove that to you. We're all born with certain standard equipment, aren't we? Standard equipment, which is designed for reproduction. And it's very clear that the male equipment is meant for initiation. And the female equipment is meant to receive. We are receivers, bearers, carriers, nurturers. And we can't get away from those facts. And God ordained that Adam was to husband Eve. And to husband means to take care of, to provide for, to cherish, to protect. And I don't find very many men who understand that anymore. Some men are actually marrying women so that the women will provide for them, put them through school, bring home half the bacon, do the housework, and also get a job. Another thing, besides feminism and the idea of equality, is so-called sexual liberation that happened before most of you were born, back in the 60s. Sexual liberation says, doesn't make any difference who you sleep with. We're all equal. You can sleep with anybody you want to, of whatever sex. And then we have what the baby boomers were called, and most of you are younger than the baby boomers, but the baby boomers, who were born between 1948 and 1964, or something like that, are called the postponed generation, putting off everything. And I know quite a few of those baby boomers, men that are in their 30s and 40s that just haven't gotten around to making a commitment because even though they may like Lucy, they think, well, Linda's pretty attractive and so's Sandy and so's Jane and so's Mary, and they don't want to narrow it down, you know, and marriage means forsaking all others, putting on blinders and keeping me only to this one. So all of those things have happened to courtship. And unfortunately, here I am speaking in a church to a bunch of kids who probably are mostly Christians. All of you have had the opportunity to hear what the Christian point of view is. And we've been squeezed, haven't we, into the world's mold. Paul said to the Romans, don't let the world squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remold your minds from within. And I don't know whether you remember, but you sang this morning, just a few minutes ago, change my way of thinking. Are you ready for that? I trust that there are some people here with ears to hear what I'm saying. Now, not everybody is going to listen. Most of you, some of you aren't listening at all anymore. But even if you listen, you're not going to let it really sink into your hearts. But some of you will. And you can be sure I'd keep my mouth shut from now on if I didn't believe that. Because I do believe that in every group there are perhaps one or two that have ears to hear. And you know, I don't tell you this to put you down. I'm not telling you this to ruin your lives. I'm telling you this to save you from the chaos that I see all around me. And as a result of my book, Passion and Purity, I have received hundreds of letters from young people, many of them saying, if only I had had this book 10 years ago, my life wouldn't be in such a mess. And many of them saying, well, I read your book and I really loved it and I put notes in the margin and I underlined it and I read it 3 times, but we'll see, I've got this story and we'll see, I've got this really neat relationship and see, I mean, this guy, he's just, I don't know whether he loves me anymore or not. And well, you see this girl, I mean, we really had a wonderful thing going and we were praying together and we were reading the scriptures and we went on a summer missions program together and I really thought she liked me and I found out she was dating somebody else, and when summer was over, she went back to him, and I mean, like, well, wow, what do I do next? So I don't want your hearts to be broken, and I don't want you to throw away your virginity if you've still got it. Now, every one of us is born, as I said, not only with the standard equipment, but also with that gift of virginity. And you can only give that once. You can never give it away again. Who would you like to give it to? The right person or the wrong person? We have a little book called Sex is a Lot More Than Fun, and a lady called up just last week to order some copies. She was going to see to it personally that 200 families of the high school kids that her kids were going to school with received those books. And she said, in this high school where my daughter goes, she said, every Monday morning, the question that they hear, the kids hear in the hall are, well, did you do it? Did you score? And that's what's taken for granted in that high school. And she said, my daughter's answer, and you can put this in your pipe and smoke it, kids, or put it in your needles and knit it, or put it in your head and remember it. She said, my daughter's answer when she says, no, I have never done it, and I am never going to do it until I get married. And then they look at her like, where'd you come from? You know, I mean, you got to be kidding. And then she says this, which I'll never forget. I can be like you anytime I want to, but you can never again be like me. I can be like you anytime I want to, but you can never again be like me. See, I don't want you to throw it away. Now, if you've already thrown it away, I have a word for you too. You know, the blood of Jesus Christ cleanses us from all sin. And God will give you back your purity, but he can never give you back your virginity. He's not going to give you back a new leg if your leg gets chopped off. But he will give you back the chance to start over, and he will give you your purity and your chastity. But if I were to ask you young men, would you like to marry a woman who is a virgin, or does it make any difference to you? I don't have any doubt whatsoever that every last one of you, even if you yourself are not a virgin, would say, I'd like to have a virgin. And if I asked the women the same question, what would your answer be? Of course it would be the same. Who wants used goods? You want a new sweatshirt. You want a new pair of shoes. We must bring every thought into obedience to Jesus Christ. That's what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12. Casting down imaginations and bringing every thought under obedience, into captivity is the word, to Jesus Christ. Now, it's perfectly normal and perfectly natural for women to be attracted to men. Whose idea was that? Well, it was God's, wasn't it? You'd never have thought of it, but it was God's idea. And it is perfectly natural for men to be attracted to women. It is not only natural for them to be attracted, it is natural for them to be aroused by women. And if you read my book, Passion and Purity, you find out that because Jim Elliot was a very popular, handsome, smart, humorous, athletic guy, I mean, he had everything. He liked girls, and he made up his mind that he was not going to date in college because he wanted to be able to keep his mind on what God had for him in those 4 years of college. And so he was naturally assumed to be a woman hater, which was very far from the truth. He loved women. He had gone steady with a girl in high school and discovered that girls are fascinating and an awful waste of time and money. So, now it's okay if you're a high school kid and you're clapping at that, but I'm not very happy with you college men that say that, because it's high time, and I am dead serious, gentlemen, it is high time you sobered up and put away childish things and began to think about marriage. I'm not saying you need to get married before you're 21, but I do believe that marriage is a part of God's will for almost everybody. I think it was God's will for everybody before the mess happened in the Garden of Eden. It was God's will that every man would have his wife and every woman would have her husband. But things have distorted all that, and we're in a terrible mess. So, because you men are the initiators, I want to say to you, have you thought about the fact that you need to get down on your knees and surrender your desire for sex, your desire for a wife, your desire for a home and family, which is normal and natural and God-given, and just say, Lord, here it is. I don't know what to do with this. I'm likely to make a mess of it. Look at all the other people making a mess of it. Every time you turn around, you hear about some Christian leader that's made a disaster out of his life. Why? Because we've let the world squeeze us into its own mold. Cut it out. Forget it. And I'm talking about a very drastic alternative. If you read Passion and Purity, you also know that Jim and I were very aware of the fact that our feelings for each other were like a tornado. We didn't know what to do with them. And so we said, Lord, we're not going to do anything with these feelings. We're going to turn them over to you, and you handle it. If you want to bring us together, you can do that. If you don't want to bring us together, that's your business. I was going to Africa. Jim was going to South America. There was no human way that we were ever going to see each other again, as far as we knew. We fell in love in college. I was a senior. He was a junior. I lived in New Jersey. He lived in Portland, Oregon. How were we ever going to meet again? And the commitment that we made included all physical contact. We just said, Lord, because we know it's dangerous, because we know very well that holding hands with a member of the opposite sex on a park bench on a moonlight night is a very different thing from shaking hands with Dr. Strauss after the service on a Sunday morning. Is it different or is it not? And does it make any difference to you whether you are kissing your grandmother or kissing a very attractive young woman in the dark in the back seat of a car? Is there any difference? Now, if there's anybody here that's going to tell me it doesn't make any difference, then I say, I don't have a message for you. You're not going to have any trouble whatsoever in your life. You're not going to get married either. But for somebody to tell me, oh, come on, are you going to tell me that you and Jim Elliot didn't even hold hands until you got engaged? I'm going to say, yes, that's what I'm going to tell you. Well, are you going to say, and don't you dare go out of here and say, Elizabeth Elliot says it's a sin to hold hands. I'm not saying that. And that's not what I'm going to say. But what I am going to say, young people, is you've got to draw a line. And I am giving you the line that Jim and I drew. And guess what? You are never going to find yourself pregnant by mistake if you draw the line there. You are never going to hear on the phone that little voice saying, Jim, I think I'm pregnant. And say to yourself, how did this happen? It happens the same way every time. You didn't draw the line. The girl went to the guy's dormitory room. Oh, well, we were just going to pray together. Listen, this is what I get in the letters. I can show you these letters I get. These fine Christian couples. We prayed together. We read the Bible together. And then he didn't call me for about 6 weeks, and I couldn't stand it. And so I called him up, and I said, Bill, you know, we really need to talk. And he said, what about? And I said, well, I don't know. We used to talk a lot, and our relationship's just sort of falling apart, and I just have to talk to you. And he says, all right, well, come on over. So she goes over to the men's dorm. And the last line in her letter, you know, she writes me 19 pages. As if I don't know on page 1 what's going to happen. And on page 19, I gave away my virginity. You don't lose your virginity. You give it away. Is that what you want to do? Now, I'm here this morning to challenge you to do what Jesus Christ wants you to do. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, it is not true that the body is for lust. It is for the Lord. Didn't you know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit of God? You are not your own. You are bought with a price. Now, what does the world tell you? Every single day, McDonald's is saying, have it your way. The world is saying, do your own thing. It's your body. You have a right to your own life. If it feels good, do it. It's all lies. And I stand before you telling you the truth of God. Now, I am not going to spell out the details and say, don't hold hands, and by all means, don't ever date anybody until God has pointed his finger to the woman that you're to marry. But I am going to say, the Bible says it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Now, it's Paul writing that. And the Apostle Paul is also the one that says, greet one another with a holy kiss. So he's not ruling out all kinds of touching. He is ruling out the kind of touching that you know just as well as I do what he's talking about. If you become emotionally bare, it's not going to be very long before you become physically bare. Spiritual intimacy, getting together with members of the opposite sex to read the Bible and pray, is a dangerous business. I don't recommend it. If you want to read the Bible and pray with somebody, you find somebody of your own sex. Spiritual intimacy leads to emotional intimacy. You start putting all your cards on the table and telling each other how you feel about each other, and then about how you really feel about each other, and then about how you really, really feel. And what happens next? Physical intimacy. So let me read to you from way back, about 300 years ago, St. Francis de Sales wrote this. Young people who indulge in looks and caresses or speak words in which they would be unwilling to be discovered by their fathers, mothers, husbands, wives, bear witness that their conduct is not that of honor and conscience. It is good for a man not to touch a woman. The God who gives us truth tells us that his truth endures to all generations. I'm very aware, I'm sure not as aware as you are, because I have been where you are and you've never been where I am, but I'm very aware of the fact that there is a generation gap. But there is no generation gap in the truth of God. And so I challenge you, young women, this morning, keep your body for God. Do not let those men touch you. And if any man ever says to you, well, if you loved me, you'd let me kiss you, the answer to that is, if you loved me, you wouldn't ask. I had a letter just last week from a young woman who told me that her life had been changed through reading my book, Passion and Purity. And she said, I know you will rejoice with me. And this was a woman in her 30s who had been doing a whole lot of perfectly harmless but utterly useless time-wasting kinds of things with guys. Cooking for them, letting them sponge off her, going out in groups and all that kind of stuff. There's nothing wrong with any of that, but it doesn't lead toward marriage. Not when you give them everything they're looking for outside of marriage, and that's one of the big problems. The women are foolishly allowing men to get away with all sorts of liberties, and they're doing things for them. But anyway, she said, I know you will rejoice with me to know that I am going to be married to the young man that I had once talked to you about, and we are looking forward to our first kiss in the wedding ceremony. I challenge you young men to back off and shut up and get down on your knees and say, Lord, I've been a fool. I've hurt some women. I've been hurt. I want your way. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. And if you have a wife for me, Lord, I'm willing to wait. And I will respect her. And I will wait for your time. And I will not mess around. And I will not tell her I love her until I am ready to say, will you marry me? That was my father's advice to my four brothers. Do not ever say to a girl, I love you.